Maybe you were an octopus in your past life. I'm going to Google it really quick. One sec.
Google it.
And what if I told you that behind the golden glow of the sun, there lies a dark secret, a cosmic enigma?
First, before you go into that, please can we start with what even is astrophysics?
But couldn't they just make up that number to fit their calculations?
Oh my God.
Basically, like an enigma. It's pretty much like the motivation that I have at this point in my PhD, and it's just invisible. Yeah. And that's called a singularity.
And some of the methodology I had used and was basically telling me that the way I had done things was garbage.
They are throwing shade. That is mad.
Why are you that pressed?
You're listening to the So Cultured podcast, where we bring you the latest science and tech goss, served with a side of piping hot laboratory.
We're your hosts, Liv,
Yaz,
and Taz.
Three girls with a passion for science and tech.
Look, we've got the credentials, so we should know what we're talking about.
We're asking the dumb questions so you don't have to, and obviously all opinions are our own.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and let's get into it.
Welcome back to the So Culture podcast. I'm so excited for today's episode, although I have to admit, I have been so stressed this week.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what it's about this week, but I've just been so busy and just not had time to do anything. Just, I think it's just been one of those weeks. I'm like stressed.
Yeah, literally.
I honestly wish I could, you know, like I just wish I could click my fingers and just be wherever sometimes.
I relate to that feeling, but I'm sorry, guys. I don't relate to the stressful week.
Oh, all right, hon.
I've actually had quite a good week. I actually submitted a paper this week, guys, so I feel on top of the world. I'm sorry.
Oh, proud of you, but I literally feel, I think we, okay, me and Taz at least, we can just be like, we're stressed. You sound like you're having like a great time.
I mean, to be fair, it's been a very stressful week, but just at the end of the week, you know, when you're like, you finished something like by Friday, it was like, I want to have this done. So it has been a stressful week, but I feel like the stress was worth it.
Yeah, I kind of love it when, nice. I don't love it, but you know, it's been like a stressful week, but then everything gets done by Friday and then you're like, oh, the weekend, you can celebrate, have a good time. So I kind of feel that.
That
and also congrats for your paper. That's really good.
Thanks.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you. Exactly. I mean, it's not technically, it's not actually published yet. It's just second revision. So yeah, but quick question, because something you just said, Taz, just made me think of a question that I have for you guys. So you just mentioned like how you'd love to click your fingers and then just be wherever. And do you know what? Me and my boyfriend was actually talking earlier about superpowers. And we was asking each other, like, if you could have one superpower, what would it be? So now I want to hear your guys' answers.
Yeah, damn. I don't know. I reckon, a bit like Taz, I just need like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's super. I was going to say just like extra arms, you know, like things. Oh. I just need help. I just need
octopus
help.
Octopus arms.
Yaz, so you have an obsession with digits and limbs, because every time we ask you one of these questions, you're always talking about toes or legs or arms.
Maybe in a past life or something, I didn't have certain body parts. Now I'm like,
maybe you were an octopus in your past life, because you don't like toes, you don't like feet, but you'd want more limbs. So, and you do marine biology, so
I was an octopus. Oh my God, it's like your spirit animal. Why do you want more arms? You can do more stuff in the lab.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking the lab, but you know when you get home and you've just got to tidy, you've got to cook, you've got to clean, like
You've got to adult.
Yeah, like I can't. My two hands. I'd just rather get home and go to sleep and just forget about eating and cleaning and tidying. Yeah. But what about you, Taz?
I honestly think, well, like I said, I would love to be able to click my fingers and just be anywhere. I can't remember what's the word for that superpower. I can't remember. Oh, there's a word for it.
Wow, you guys are clever. I didn't even know there was a word for that.
No, but that's not the word.
Is it not? Oh.
Trans. I can't remember what. You just. It's trans something.
It's so
Google it.
I'm going to Google it really quick.
Transport Transportation.
No.
Oh, teleportation.
Yes, teleportation.
Oh my god, I do know the word.
We were completely wrong.
Oh, and that was me, like, I don't know the word. Oh, it's teleportation.
Yeah, you're like, you guys are so clever, and then we're just sat there like, we can't even finish, and you just come out with it.
Taz just wants to be able to transform.
I just want to be a bus driver, guys. Forget science.
Oh my gosh. That's yeah, funny. Transport.
Right, okay, so what I was gonna say is teleportation or like the ability to time travel, but I'd say within like a couple of days, not like go back in time, but like, you know, like Hermione in Harry Potter where she has that little like necklace thing to get to all her classes. That's what I need.
Yeah, that was literally, that was my answer as well. Like, time travel would just be the most perfect one, I think. Like, if you mess something up, you just go back, you fix it. It would just be the most perfect one.
Yeah. Although, have you watched About Time?
No.
I feel like
my god, that is the best film ever.
I thought you were talking about the Justin Timberlake film.
No,
is that in
About Time? It's got what's her freaking name?
There is one actor I know, and that's Tom
Rachel
Hardy.
McAdams.
Oh, I know her.
Oh, I think I've
from
seen
mean
it.
Girls. Yeah, yeah, it's so good, and he can time travel and stuff. And he goes on a blind date with her and literally does it about 6 times because he messes up and he doesn't want to mess up.
I don't know if I'd use my superpower for that.
Oh, I would recommend. It's like one of my fave, like, romantic films. Definitely watch.
Oh, I thought you said roadmantic. Romantic.
What? Roadmantic.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I do think it'll be quite lit for time travel. And interestingly, today we are moving away from our norm of, like, the kind of biology and bit more of the tech focus to physics. So I'm not going to be able to tell you how we could potentially time travel, but I think we should get into it. So, girls, I was going to say that as we are cozied up this winter, or at least for Liv and myself, who are in the UK, because it is cold.
Yeah, not me, babe.
Yeah, you're already in the sun, but I've been reminiscing and thinking of, like, holidays and the past, or just, like, warmer days. Mm-hmm. And I just can't wait till I can feel that warmth of the sun on my skin again. Like, Taz, how does that even feel?
Feels great, can't lie, guys.
But obviously, today's episode, we are going to be talking about physics. And what if I told you that behind the golden glow of the sun, there lies a dark secret, a cosmic enigma? So on today's episode, let's explore the world of astrophysics.
Sounds fun.
I've seen some interesting work recently about whether there could potentially be black holes stuck inside the sun.
What? Yeah, so I know we said we'd be coming out of our comfort zones for this one, but I don't think I'm ready. Okay, first, before you go into that, please can we start with what even is astrophysics?
Honestly, before I started doing some of the reading for today's episode, I didn't even know myself. And let me just preface this whole episode by saying I actually failed my physics A level. I got a U. And then I had to reset the year because I failed my other A-levels as well. So I think it's safe to say that's why I became a biologist eventually. And yeah, I'm completely intimidated by this topic because it's just, like you say, so out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to just break it down to what I understand. So within astronomy, so you have the study of space and stuff. We have astrophysics, which uses chemistry and physics to study the universe and how planets and stars behave. So to start and to get into like the point of studying astrophysics, it is a really important topic that contributes to scientific understanding about the world and beyond. And it could indicate clues about the origins of life, which is always something that I find so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also thinking about where different elements come from, there's always these ideas that they might have come from places other than our world, than other than Earth. So I'm always interested in like understanding stuff like this.
Yeah, like I must admit I I love astrophysics in the sense that I like learning about the planets and how big our solar system is and our universe is, and it always blows my mind. But I must admit, I don't really know that much about it. So obviously you mentioned the study about black holes in the sun, and I assume that has something to do with dark matter. So maybe we can start with that. What is dark matter?
Yeah, literally, it is basically like an enigma. It's pretty much like the motivation that I have at this point in my PhD, and it's just invisible. Like, like dark matter genuinely is invisible because it doesn't absorb or emit or reflect light. So the reasons that scientists, or especially like physicists, astrophysicists, have come up with this idea of dark matter is that basically, when you look at doing calculations about the gravitational pull on the universe and stuff that's like visible, so like visible matter, their calculations don't, or from what I understand, the calculations don't account for all that gravity from what you can see from like planets and stars that are there. Mm-hmm. So there has to be something else that exists to contribute to this gravitational pull. So that's what they've basically called, or it's dark matter. And when they then add this idea of dark matter to the models, it makes up for these calculations. With this, scientists like have never seen dark matter, and it is really hard to study. And they suggest that dark matter contributes to over 80% of all matter in the universe.
What? But couldn't they just make up that number to fit their calculations?
So,
yeah, that kind of sounds like what they've done.
That's literally what I thought.
Sorry if there's any astrophysicists listening. Like, we're not saying that what you've done is wrong. We're just confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, either their math wasn't mathing, because they've literally looked at visible matter. So that's like your protons, electrons, atoms that you can see. So literally like our jumpers that we're wearing, us, anything that you can see is like a visible matter. When they then try and add up the gravitational pull that they've seen in galaxies, they can't, like, the visible matter just doesn't add up to the maths. Right. But for me, I also think that, like, does that mean that they just have to add something in? They're like, well, we can't figure out where this other thing's coming from, so let's just say it's this dark matter, it's just invisible.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I
but
need
like
to...
it could just be like a limitation of what we know at the moment. Like, there's so much that we don't know, so I feel like it's fair enough to just label something as this is the situation. We're gonna call it this.
I have full faith that their math is mathing, and they have the right conclusion. I might not understand it, but I have faith in their calculations.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to delve into any of the equations and try and figure it out myself. So let's just go with the fact that dark matter is there. We just can't see it. They actually say that they can't even use it like a sensor or detect it in any way. So I imagine it being like a magic floating ball of just like invisible stuff. Like, did you ever watch The Haunted Mansion? And there was that ball that would just like float.
No,
you never watched The Haunted Mansion. No, you have not lived.
We've already discovered I don't watch anything. I do not get any TV or movie references.
Anyway, I'm just going to stop with the TV references. But if any listeners have like watched Haunted Mansion, it was my childhood favorite. It's an Eddie Murphy classic. There was this like crystal ball that would just start floating and had like a soul in it, and I just imagine that that's like, you know, dark matter is just some random thing just like floating around because you can't see it.
Mm-hmm. Got you.
Okay, yeah. I get you. So we can't see it, we can't detect it, but we know it's there.
Yeah.
But isn't there dark energy as well? Is there a difference? Can we see that?
Yeah. So this is where it gets actually confusing. So what they say is dark matter is to do with the gravitational pull of things. So if we imagine a galaxy and we have loads of stars like dotted around, they're all clustered quite closely together. And that's because of the dark matter pulling these stars and planets inwards towards each other. So that means that they're like more closely together. Whereas if we didn't have that dark matter, stars would be a lot more like spaced out because there wouldn't be this gravitational pull pulling them in. But then we also have dark energy, and this is essentially the opposite of dark matter. So it is to do with the universe expanding. And so where I read something and it was saying, like, imagine a balloon you draw like spots on a balloon and then you start to blow it up, and then mm-hmm. in between, like when you're blowing up the balloon, obviously between the dots that you've drawn on, there's like space going in between them. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially mm-hmm. what my understanding of dark energy is, that it's an opposing effect, or like it's different to dark matter. So there yeah. are two things, but honestly I don't know the actual like math or how they're just saying that there's all these things that we can't see. But mm-hmm. essentially what it means is there's two different parts. There's like dark matter, dark energy, and they do different things.
Okay, yeah, mm. that makes sense.
It's kind of wild to think about that. We've really got space in ourselves.
Yeah, like we have space within us. So even that's all like this, like I don't know how you account for that, but there's like things that they just can't see but they know is there.
Yeah, I remember learning about like atoms and like everything you were just speaking about in my chemistry class, and I like really loved chemistry and I really wanted to be good at it. Same with physics. Like I think I always wanted to go into physics, and I was like, actually I'm not clever enough for this, let me try chemistry. And then I was like, actually I'm not clever enough for this. But yeah, I remember
I also think it depends on your teachers as well. Like I had a 100%. Great chemistry teacher and an awful physics teacher, and really? It just like translated to subjects that I liked. Like I loved yeah. chemistry, and then I really didn't enjoy physics, even though it was an interesting subject.
Mm.
Yeah,
I remember learning about it and always thinking, what, yeah, but what is in between, like talking about space? And I was like, oh my god, I could just never wrap my head around it.
Gravity, I just know it's a thing, so let's just go with that. Gravity is a thing. And so if you've got a black hole, there are three main parts to this black hole. So you have a really concentrated like mass at the center, and this is where there is so much gravity going on. It's like a core, and it's just like all the gravity is just it's all going on in there, you know. And that's called a singularity. And then outside of this big ball or this gravity center, the singularity, there is a invisible layer or like a boundary that surrounds this. And this is that when something goes past this boundary and into the dense like gravity trapdoor that I'll probably call it, but I think it's not, it's just this singularity. If like light passes through this boundary layer, it does not come back, like it's a point of no return. Yeah. So it's just like this gravity will just suck anything up. So literally called like the point of no return. And then beyond this invisible layer, which is actually called the event horizon, outside of this event horizon, you have another layer. And this is essentially the black hole's ability to pull in matter from the surrounding areas. So like visible matter. So if it's another star, it could basically just like pull this star in on the black hole. And that's called an accretion disk. So essentially a black hole has just like loads of gravity at the center pulling things from outside inwards.
Okay, so singularity is at the center, then you've got like the invisible layer around.
Yeah.
And then you've got the accretion disk on the outside, and that's what pulls everything in.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
Oh my god, that's scary. Do you guys ever just like, sometimes I'll literally be sat on the train, or I'll be like sat at work, and I'll literally just think we could literally just all be pulled into a black hole like right now. That's like my intrusive thought.
I never
thought.
Think like that.
Do
you
not?
Not
I always do.
That's not how my intrusive thoughts work.
I always think that. Okay.
Yeah, I agree, Liv. Sometimes I'm like, oh, what if the moon just crashed into the earth right now?
Yeah, literally. I think it like quite often. I like to think, like, if something is going really wrong in my life, like, does it really matter? Because we could all be sucked into a black hole tomorrow. So is it that deep? That's kind of, like, my thoughts, you know?
Yeah, I guess you have to find one first, and it has to be close. So then, you know, see if we get sucked in.
Wait.
Well, there might be one in the sun.
Okay, so talking of how they, like, find them, before we, like, get onto that or more into like whether there is black holes in the sun, how do we study black holes and dark matter? Like, how would you even go about starting to study that, especially for dark matter, because it's something that you literally can't see? So yeah, how do they study it?
Honestly, I found this baffling, that I was like, you know, as experimental biologists, we can test our hypotheses and actually see a result, whereas with this, it's so theoretical that I just, like, my brain is not wired that way to be able to understand it. But some of the ways they can study black holes or dark matter is mainly like doing maths equations. They can observe different like galaxy movements. You know, the Hadron Collider, I feel like I just heard about it and thought like everyone was scared that there was going to be like a doomsday event maybe or something because of it. They are essentially just trying to prove or provide evidence for dark matter. So that's like underground. There's just tests going on. I don't know.
Okay, wait, what's the Hadron Collider?
And if you've not heard of the Hadron Collider, it is essentially the world's largest and kind of most high or the highest energy particle accelerator. They have it underground where they're doing tests and they're essentially just beaming different particles towards each other at the speed, like close to the speed of light, and they're meant to collide. And then they could like maybe do more analysis or deeper analysis of trying to understand about like the idea behind the Big Bang.
Okay, yeah, got it.
And also another way that they could study like dark matter is there's something called the cosmic microwave background. And I don't know all the details about this, but essentially scientists can look at like the event of the Big Bang or some like a simulation of what would happen after the Big Bang. And they can look at like how the light and everything travels. And they would be able to track the dark matter from that, like where would the dark matter go and why can't we then detect it now? So there's ways that they can just use like models, simulations, maths to try and figure out what is dark matter, where would it be. But they also, I think they can tell that looking at certain galaxies and stuff, light might bend slightly differently around like dark matter. So then they assume that it is there. Because it is so hard to like actually study black holes and dark matter, this is actually what the study did, is they were interested in trying to look at whether a black hole could be in the sun.
That seems kind of wild to me. Like, are we just going to be sucked into a black hole imminently? How, like, what is the study? What have they done? And how can they, I guess, identify something that they can't measure?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and can I just say that, like, doesn't it kind of make a bit of sense? Because, like, you're saying about how dark matter contributes to like gravitational pull and then like all of the planets orbit the sun. So like, I guess maybe it makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. The idea is that this study, in all the headlines in the news, in the media, which we'll like link in the description as well, is that they have said there is a black hole in the sun. And then when you look at this paper, I think the first line of it literally says like, it's doubtful, like there probably isn't one, but it is interesting to study the idea of black holes in the sun so that you are able to detect a black, like the presence of a black hole, because you'd have something physical like the sun as a measure. So because you can't really see this, like they want to look at the stars and using the sun as an example, we kind of have to take it back to what a life cycle of a star is. So I don't know if any of you know like anything about stars and how they are, or like,
I feel like I've definitely I remember learning about it. Yeah, the life cycle of a star. I've definitely done that, but I've definitely also forgot it.
Yeah, same, to be honest.
It's definitely physics GCSE.
Yeah,
you had to learn every stage of the life cycle of the sun.
Yeah, literally, I just forgot that. So anyway, I'm gonna try and break it down. So yeah, if we go back to like the basics of a star's life cycle, essentially a star is just a huge glowing ball of hot gas, and like deep within it, so inside its center, there is hydrogen atoms that are just like pounding against each other. They're smashing into each other and they can form helium and release huge amounts of energy that heats the gas. And this is called nuclear fusion, and it's why a star shines brightly. And so as the hot gas pushes outward, it opposes the inward pull of gravity. And then we have approaches a what's called a red giant phase. So don't know, you probably remember there was like all these different terms. Mm-hmm. And this essentially is when the star starts to run out of hydrogen. So it's not actually using hydrogen as its energy source. But then it can expand and it can then become a red giant. And this is just like the star starts swelling outwards. Mm-hmm. So in my head, I am literally just imagining when Violet from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory just swells and turns into that like blueberry. And then as the star is just swelling, when the outside of it, like the outer layer cools down, it becomes more reddish rather than the like shine when you're using, when it's like using hydrogen. So that's why it becomes a red giant. And so essentially with this, there is a reason for me explaining the life cycle of a star is that because when stars usually go through this red giant phase, it will look a certain type of way. But if a star contains a black hole, it will literally look different than a normal red giant does. So because normal stars, or like stars, are normally using fusion to power and to like create its shine, but when it's got a black hole in it, it will be powered by the accretion disk instead. So like all the other matter around it that's like pulling into the center glows differently. So then it becomes a more dimmer star. So that's essentially why scientists in this study are thinking it would be really cool to look out for stars that are dimmer, like red giants that are dimmer in certain galaxies, so that they're all like in close galaxies, so they could determine if a black hole was within it. So that's like one way that they're like coming up with a new method of how to study something that's like pretty much impossible to study otherwise.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that actually makes sense. And I feel like that's a super clever way to study it. And also I feel like that is a feasible way of studying it. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Physicists are literally so clever. But yeah, can you tell us like what did they find? Did they find anything interesting, or like did they find that the sun might contain a black hole or not?
I think literally in the paper, the researcher had actually stated right at the end of their interview, I'm going to quote their words. They were like, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't exist, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they did, referring to black holes in the sun. So I think it's very much like they just don't know. It's just a very open question. It's just an exciting avenue to explore. But they did find something, and like posing this interesting question of like having black holes in stars, is that using a particular survey, they found around 500 stars that could be good candidates to look for, because when they're going through this red giant phase, they do look dimmer. So I guess it's hard to know if they're dimmer because of distance or different ways that they're burning, or like different ages of the star, or whether they could potentially harbor a black hole within them.
This stuff just honestly blows my mind, because obviously, like you said, it's all theoretical. But ultimately, what does this mean? Like, if there is black holes in stars, what does that mean?
But yeah, Taz, basically, it's just like a cool avenue to potentially understand more about dark matter and how it all kind of could be going on. Because right now, physicists or astrophysicists like literally know that dark matter exists, but it's just pretty difficult to understand. And I think this actually gives a solid outlook on like how you can like either track it, detect it, and then study it beyond that to like understand what could be going on. But what they did look at is, within this research, they were saying like, even if there was a black hole in a star or in our sun, it doesn't necessarily mean it's just going to get like the sun's just going to get swallowed up into the black hole immediately. It depends on loads of different factors of like the size, the gravitational pull of the black hole, how big the star is that it would be in. So it could be like another few billion years until that star was like eaten almost, you know, like by the black hole. So it's not like a doom and gloom, but I think it's just more of a nice like intellectual, thought-provoking way to study dark matter.
So if I'm correct and I've understood you correctly, so like basically they will study the brightness of the stars. So you just say, you know, they were saying about how they've looked at like 500 stars or whatever from this survey,
but I think what this study had done is they haven't actually looked at the 500 stars yet. It's that they've taken them from a survey as like a candidate of like what we could look at. Because even for my brain, just trying to understand in our galaxy, I can't, you know, like thinking of the Milky Way and then beyond that. I don't know if you've ever been I've been to planetariums and I sit there and I'm like, wait, they keep zooming out, like stop. Because what is going on? So yeah, I don't know how far or like in what distant galaxies they're looking, and do they have a cutoff? Because
yeah.
like, surely they must do. And that's like to the extent of this study I was looking at. But the main aim of this paper isn't that they have found a black hole in the sun mm-hmm. or even in a star. It is mm-hmm. just like a way that they could be pursuing
that they can study
it. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Just one more thing. This might be dumb, but do stars move? Google it.
I'm gonna Google
I think they do. They're like constantly moving through.
Okay, in reality, the stars are constantly moving. They're just so far away that the naked eye cannot detect their movement, but sensitive instruments can detect their movement. So I'm guessing that they would actually be factoring, if there's a way of measuring the yeah. stars moving, they would be factoring that into their equations. So they would,
yeah,
yeah, so that wouldn't be an issue, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so interesting. Yeah,
I think
well,
so.
It would probably aid their research anyway,
yeah,
because
yeah.
I feel like, didn't you mention before about how light bends differently around dark matter? So if a star contains dark matter or like a black hole,
yeah,
then like obviously if they track that over time,
mm-hmm.
they yeah. might see that light reacts differently to that particular star if it contains yeah. a black hole.
Do you think we have any physicists listening?
I Surely. Hope they can.
God, I hope not.
I know, yeah. Let me just remind everyone, I am not a physicist, but it is interesting to talk about, especially from our perspective yeah. where I genuinely failed my A-level because I found it so intimidating. I was just like, this isn't for me, and just mm-hmm. cut off from it all. Like, I just didn't listen anymore. Yeah. Whereas when you break it down and it's accessible, I found this, I was going down rabbit holes. I was like, this is so exciting and interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I also feel like we literally mentioned in the intro of our first ever episode that we always have like conversations about stuff like this in our group chat. And that's literally why we started our podcast. So I don't feel like we should be ashamed to have these conversations about topics that we're not too knowledgeable on. Like, we don't claim to know it all. We're just having fun science conversations, and like if there's listeners, like people listening who know more about this topic, we'd absolutely love to hear from you. Like, if we've said something really stupid, yeah. like we would love for you guys to educate us. Like, we're not only here to hopefully educate you, but we want to be educated as well, you know.
100%. And I think stuff like this, we might even cross like disciplines where people listening might have great ideas that could help yeah. researchers in a field, because genuinely, I've never thought so deeply about dark. Like, I actually, yeah. I'd heard dark matter, but did I ever give it a exactly. second thought of like, what is it? When I'm yeah. doing my biology, thinking about the sea, I don't think about like mm-hmm. dark matter and gravitational pull. Like mm-hmm. I probably should, but I just don't. So I definitely think there's some interesting questions to be had around this.
I agree,
and this study definitely goes into it a lot deeper, so if you are interested and you can look at the equations, we will definitely link it. It's mm-hmm. available as a preprint.
Thanks Yaz so much for pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. I particularly enjoyed this episode, and yeah, like I said, I think it's so fun for us to cover other topics that we don't know too much about, but let's just hope that no one comes for us if we said anything wrong. And actually guys, speaking of that, I actually have a very juicy email from someone related to that, so let's get into today's gossip. Okay guys, we have a new email in our inbox this morning.
Woo!
Ooh. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and read this out. So the email says, "Hey guys, as an avid listener of your podcast, I thoroughly enjoyed the gossip and science, and I have a crazy story from my first postdoc that I always think about, and I'm so excited to hear your thoughts. So I have my PhD in chemistry and I'm on my second postdoc now. When I was doing my first postdoc in Copenhagen, I went to one of our annual conferences in our field and I was super excited because I was presenting my research from my PhD. I was kind of nervous for this because I don't really like presenting my research and get a bit anxious at conferences. Same. But my old PhD supervisor was attending, so I was excited to reconnect with him and catch up. And obviously he played a big role in the research that I was presenting too.
I can relate to that so much. Like, I get so anxious at conferences. Like, honestly, it takes me a few days to get over it. It's literally the worst.
Yeah, literally. If you're going on your own as well, like, I think you always feel like a bit of a loner.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And it's just like,
but I like networking, so I just go up to random people at hi. Like, please be my friend. Okay, not quite like that, but I literally go up to people and be like, hi, how are you? Even if I know that they're talking to people, they like, not in a rude way if I'm interrupting, but if they're like with people from their lab, they'll just be standing there. I'll just go over and be like, hi, I'm so-and-so from this place. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to do that, but I just feel like knackered and I do feel anxious about it, but I do push myself to do it. But then, yeah, just for the few days after, I just feel like my social battery is so dead.
Yeah, just
I just
deflated.
I just awkwardly eat my food in the corner of the room because I can't.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
No, I'll be like, can I join your table to eat my food? Like, that's sad, Taz. I want to like come to a conference with you soon.
I'm
alone.
With Taz. I'm with Taz. I would rather eat in the corner by myself.
Just drinking the free wine.
Anyways, let's get back to the email. So the second day of the conference comes around and I was presenting just after lunch. By the way, for context, the rest of the conference had all gone great and everyone was really collaborative and friendly. Anyways, my presentation comes around and although I was nervous, it all went really well. I stuck to time and managed to get through it without my notes, lol, if you know. I do know.
We know.
We all know. However, the Q&A session after my presentation took an odd turn. Where is this going? So another researcher, known for being a bit of a dick really, basically took over the whole Q&A session. I literally hate when people do that. I hate when people take over the whole Q&A. It's the worst.
And they always feel like they know so much more.
Yeah, literally. It's so annoying. Anyways, they say he pretty much straight away started probing some of the methodology I had used and was basically telling me that the way I had done things was garbage and should be redone. I was trying to defend it, but also it was really awkward and I didn't want to argue in front of the audience. That's literally the worst when someone's like low-key arguing with you, but you don't want to like argue back. Oh my God, I literally hate that. Have you guys ever had that?
I would probably stand and cry because what would you actually say? Like, actually, I think I'm backing up myself. This is why I did it. And then they're just like, got to be in their bonnet. I would be like,
yeah, but then at the same time, you don't want to
lie. I'm so defensive. I would just be like, no, I've done it right. Go away.
It's awkward, isn't it? Anyways, okay, let me carry on because I feel like it's going to get good. Okay. So then they say, but then my old PhD supervisor butted in and he was really defending our methodology and findings, but things really quickly escalated. So they were pretty much going back and forth for about 5 minutes, proper insulting each other and arguing why the other's work was wrong. So this is like, I'm guessing the old PhD supervisor and the person like asking the questions, they're arguing. That's so awkward. Like, what would you do? Like,
why are you that pressed?
And in front of everyone, do you know what I mean? Like, sit down and just shut up.
I just want to know what this guy was doing, like, wow. Because imagine you're just sit on the stage, like, awkward, like, hands by your side. Like, what do you do? That would be so awkward.
There's no harm in going up to someone after their presentation and having a conversation. Like, this just seems like a bit of a dick swinging match, being like, my methodology is better than yours. Like, just speak to them after.
But also, there's like Q&A and then it's the next person speaking. So they haven't actually got that much time. Like, why are you wasting time? It just sounds embarrassing on their part.
Well, I think some people literally want to do it in front of other people. Like, that's obviously why he's done it, is he obviously wants to, like you say, like, throw his dick about in front of everyone. Like, anyways, okay, I want to hear why it got unprofessional. Okay, so they say then it all got super unprofessional and escalated so quick when the guy said something along the lines of, I can't believe you'd have the audacity to present this bit of work at a conference of this caliber, which honestly, I thought was enough anyway. But then my old supervisor butted in and said something along the lines of, coming from someone who's built a career on baseless theories, it's no wonder your students struggle to produce any meaningful work under your guidance. Oh my God, no. Guys, oh, imagine.
Oh my gosh.
They are throwing shade. That is mad.
Then it gets worse, honestly.
There's something deeper happening here. Like, they know each other.
Yeah, obviously.
They're probably like best friends and they've just turned into, like, frenemies.
They say, then it gets worse, honestly. Out of nowhere, this PhD student sat two seats away from the other researchers, starts crying, and then eventually got up and walked out of the lecture theatre. Afterwards, I found out she'd recently published a paper, so I'm guessing that she thought this comment was directed towards her research. So obviously, the guy's old PhD supervisor said, like, about how none of his students produce any good work, basically. So she obviously has thought that it's directed at her. She's, like, got up and left. That is awkward. Obviously, at this point, the conference organisers got involved and basically told both them that they had to leave. Let's just say after that, it was so awkward for the next 2 days and I avoided both of them altogether. On the bright side, I guess no one will forget my presentation. Lol. Have you guys seen this before or experienced it?
At least it was memorable.
Yeah, exactly.
Not gonna lie, if I was in that lecture, I would be sat there with a bucket of popcorn like, oh, this is so much better than watching science, honestly.
I've never actually experienced something like that. I've experienced where professors are... No, actually, I have experienced one where a professor was literally like telling a student or telling another professor that their work wasn't good and all this other stuff. And you're just sitting there thinking, like, what is going on? Mm. But yeah, like, it just kind of... I don't know,
just ends. I've seen that before as well, like, definitely seen like little arguments or they make like little digs where they're like, oh, you know, maybe you've done that the wrong way, and like, oh, I'd be happy, you know, when they're like sly little comments like, you know, we can meet up afterwards and I'll tell you why it's wrong, like little things like that. But I've never seen like full-blown arguments. I don't know, not like arguments, but I've definitely seen like just had really awkward moments in QAs where I'm like, what is going on, like this is just so awkward, this could escalate any minute, but it just never does escalate, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen quite heated discussions before in Q&A panels at conferences, and I've even been there when someone has asked what is actually the point of your research. It's so awkward. They were literally like, what is the relevance of your research, like, in the wider scope?
It depends how they ask it, though, because I actually asked that question a lot.
And they really struggled to answer as well, which is so awkward.
Oh, God, that is awkward. But I actually do ask that question a lot, but not...
No, but, like, they were literally like, what is the point in this? Like, in the middle of a conference. Like, that is so awkward.
I'd have been, like, just intellectual freedom to explore and, like, curiosity. Because Blue Skies research is a thing. Like, you're researching to research. You don't always need, like, a direct application. It's just like, I thought this was cool, so I'm going to use my capability and explore it.
Or if I've always also been there when someone's clearly asked a question that's a little bit of an arsey question, and then the person's answered and just kind of given like a fluffy answer, and then they've gone back and been like, nah, you didn't answer my question.
Oh, no. No. That's
can't go a politician on me.
I hate that because that happens to me all the time. Like, for some reason, I just get really flustered in Q&As. And, like, if it's not, like, a really clear-cut question, I really, for some reason, like, when people's eyes are on me, I struggle to, like, actually hear and understand what someone's saying. So then, like, I always give, like, fluffy answers. And then they're like, yep. But that's not like, actually what I asked. I'm like... I do it all the time, honestly. And then they ask again, and then like the second time hearing it, then I understand what they're saying, and I realise that my last answer was like completely irrelevant.
Yeah. I've had it at a poster session.
I'm kind of like that, to be fair.
Yeah, I've had it at a poster session where I'm like two glasses of Prosecco deep, holding my Prosecco just in, and they're like free wine or whatever drinks at this poster session. This professor came over and literally was just like, well, how do you know that this is this? But like, he asked it in such a way that actually we had done the controls, but the way he'd asked me, I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah, and then I feel like sometimes they gaslight you. Like, sometimes they genuinely gaslight you and confuse you, I swear. And I'm just like, or like they'll ask you a question that's so obvious. And like, again, it might not be obvious to them, but because it is obvious to you, that you start overthinking what they're asking you, and then you're just like, what?
Wait, I just want to say, I feel like what we need next is a story from someone about like being drunk at a conference, or like sometime they've seen someone drunk at a conference, because I feel like it must happen so often. And I can imagine that our listeners have some like juicy stories about that. So if anyone has any stories about some drunk shenanigans at conferences, please let us know, because I'd love to hear.
This is why I need to stop drinking like permanently, or just know my limit, because I actually got so drunk once at conference. And well, I'm always drunk at conferences. But one time, this conference, it was in San Diego. It was actually so lit. But what I didn't understand was that we had a poster session. So we had an open bar, free wine for like a couple of hours. And then we had a keynote speaker at like 7 p.m. And I was actually sitting in the audience with my glass of wine, and I was so drunk, I didn't know what was going on. Me and my mate were looking at each other like, what? Like, what? And then I needed to pee so badly, so then I had to go, and I missed like half of it. So I was like, so embarrassing walking back in, and everyone knows it's just because I break the seal like 2 hours ago.
And it's just like, what is this? That is such a vibe killer. I hate when you start like really vibing with people and you're really chatting to people, and then all of a sudden you've got to go and do another like talk. That is literally the worst.
Yeah. But the keynote literally knew. He was like, I don't know why I'm giving a talk at 7 when everyone's had a drink. Like, literally. Hopefully it'll be fine. And I was thinking, yeah, because I don't know what's going on. Thanks so much to the person that sent that in. I love hearing all these stories, especially because it is so relatable. Mm-hmm. I feel like we all have little instances where things happen. Mm-hmm. And it's always just interesting discussing it. If you would like to send in a funny or crazy story about your experience in science, tech, or academia, then you can send it in to us on soculturedpodcast@gmail.com, or send it on X or on Instagram.
And don't forget, you can join us next week, and it's going to be our last episode of season 1 of So Cultured, which is so crazy. I feel like it's gone so quick. But yeah, we will be back next week with a new science or tech topic. We're keeping our last one as a surprise, so make sure you tune in next week. And with that, we will see you guys in a week's time. Bye, everyone.
Bye. You've been listening to the So Cultured podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Make sure you listen in next week for more science and tech updates and the hottest laboratory.
You can stay up to date with us in between episodes by following us on Instagram and X @SoCulturedPodcast.
See you back here, same time next week.